Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On a Thursday, the final day of July, welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. I'm Cherry Gregg. I saw you gave a little mind blower there.
My mind is blown. It's almost August. I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Today on the show, we're talking about online reviews and online review culture. I'm going to say this at the top with emphasis. We really feel like today's show lives and dies
with our caller,
with the callers and the commenters, because we want to hear your review stories. If you're a business owner and you got like a really life-changing good review or an unfair bad review, we really want to hear from you. If you're a consumer and you left a very memorable review, we want to hear from you. We've all become completely tethered to these online reviews. I don't even think we know how it happened, but we use them instinctively now. And we're asking you today, do you trust these online reviews? Have you ever left a really bad or really good review? Gotten a really bad or really good review? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, you're online. Drop a comment in the chat.
Yeah, and people on YouTube actually review the show too. Right there, you know, in the comments area, we get reviews all the time. But I was just telling you, Avi, right before the show, I had to buy like a travel backpack, and I spent like 40 minutes reading reviews.
And you're like, what am I doing?
And I couldn't even like make a decision. It took me so long to make a decision.
Right.
And I was just obsessed watching people's video reviews. I was like, oh my goodness.
I don't know if my mom is listening right now, but she actually has a pretty good story of being someone tried to shake her down for a good review, Airbnb host in the Poconos. You can call in, Mom.
People get
with the story.
Aggressive.
It's weird. Review culture is weird, and you get it on some level because the business owners are like, this is my lifeblood. I need these reviews. But then it's like, well, what good are they if they're like using leverage or like harassing people to give good
people.
Or paying people to give or making fake ones? So that's the show topic today. It's also Thursday, so it's DJ of the day, which means we will end the show with a song picked by one of you about the show's theme today. Producer Paige makes the picks.
Yes.
Send your suggestions to studio2@whyy.org before 12:30.
And by the way, some ideas on the themes, reviews, stars, good, bad, the internet, shopping, spending money, all those things. There's some songs out there that cover all of this. Who doesn't like this?
And speaking of not spending money, but saving money, as an added bonus today, we have two pairs of tickets to give away to the Low Cut Connie Show happening tomorrow night in King of Prussia. It's part of the Concerts Under the Stars series. Starts at 7 p.m., $90 value. Everyone who emails us this week in any capacity is eligible to win. So that's DJ of the day or a comment or whatever. So studio2@whyy.org if you want a chance to win those tickets.
And get lucky, you know, because it's nice when we have that conversation with our listeners and everything. So I really hope people call in 888-477-9499. I look forward to hearing your stories. Our trio of news stories.
Start us off, Cherry.
Yeah, pretty somber one. Five people, four of them children, were shot on Wednesday afternoon at a West Philadelphia rec center, and police are now searching for several suspects. The shooting happened at the Christie Rec Center at 56 and Christian. That's when video shows several people approaching the center, and within seconds, those folks were seen running from the area, and police say a 10 and an 11-year-old were grazed by bullets fired near the pool area. Two 16-year-olds were also shot. One of them is in critical condition. A fifth victim was a 32-year-old, member of the staff at the rec center. Philadelphia Mayor Sherelle Parker told reporters that the city will do everything it can to make sure that the individuals that committed this crime will be held accountable. Take a listen to what the mayor had to say.
Whenever you cross this line and whenever there is a shooting of any kind, we don't want to see it happen here in the city of Philadelphia, but to do it right here, where you know young people are engaged in activities that are supposed to be safe and fun for the entire family, that means that you have no regard for human life. You have no regard for our young people.
And by the way, I have to say that in 2021, a 16-year-old was shot and killed at this same rec center. So this recent incident hit this neighborhood particularly hard. because the city had already been working and focused on this area to make it feel safe again to the residents.
And of course, it's disturbing on many levels.
Mm-hmm.
But my mind goes to this idea of how do you build community if the community center doesn't feel like a safe space?
Yeah. And people send their children there to have fun, to play games. And now you're going to be, those families are going to be nervous about that.
That's understandably scary. So.
Yeah.
Understandably so. Second story now. Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman. You know him. Mm-hmm. He has a memoir coming out in November. It's called Unfettered. Obvious title, but I think sometimes the obvious title is the correct one. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so lots of politicians have memoirs. Not surprising. Fetterman's coming out with one. There is a Philadelphia subplot here, though.
Ooh,
Fetterman's collaborator on the book is Buzz Bissinger, who is himself a really big name in the literary world. Bissinger won a Pulitzer at the Inky. He wrote one of the classic books about Philly and Philly politics called A Prayer for the City. And he wrote the classic high school football book, Friday Night Lights. So big name.
Yeah.
Now, last month, the outlet Defector reported that Bissinger and Fetterman clashed repeatedly during the writing of this project, and that according to one source, Bissinger came to believe that Fetterman, quote, should no longer be in office. Now, Bissinger's name is still attached to this Fetterman memoir, and in a statement through the book's publisher, Bissinger told the New York Times, he provided a template for the book, but, quote, the book is John's. So some murkiness around exactly how attached Bissinger is to the project. Of course, his name certainly helps sell the book, and I would imagine at a higher price, so it's not inconsequential that he's attached to it.
Yeah, sounds like a statement to put some distance between himself and the senator on this.
Maybe, maybe a little speculation there, but you can't help but read between the lines. Yeah,
and I'm sure Fetterman got a handsome sum to do this book, and I'm sure it'll sell. Why? Because there is an element of the population that is kind of sick of hearing about, you know, John Fetterman, the senator. But there's also a segment that is very, very intrigued about what happened to him, right? You know, how he went from this very progressive guy who the Democrats just absolutely love to this more right-leaning guy post-stroke. And people want to know. He hasn't said a lot. He hasn't done a lot of interviews. And so they want to peel back the layer. So I'm predicting that it's going to do well regardless of this. At least people are going to probably just be very interested in, like, what happened? And some people are mad, you know, at Senator Fetterman, and others, you know, they just want to know. They want answers. So,
yeah, I want answers to this Bissinger subplot. We probably won't get them. We probably won't get them.
But, you know, by the way, if he ever wants to come on the show.
Open invitation for sure. Absolutely. And to Buzz as well, by the way. Story number three, Cherry.
So parents have been sending their kids to overnight camp in the Poconos, and they've been using increasingly sophisticated methods, or shall I say devices, to smuggle in forbidden candies and junk food into the camp for their kids.
They're smuggling in candy?
Smuggling in contraband.
Oh my God.
This is according to a story in the Wall Street Journal. And when I talk about contraband, I'm talking about M&Ms. I'm talking about gummy bears, Snicker bars, okay? And apparently they've been banned by these camps because they attract critters, you know, mice and all kinds of bugs.
You can't have candy in the bunks.
And when the kids check in, the counselors go through their stuff. They also go through their packages that are mailed in. And so parents have been finding ways to send that candy in. And, you know, it's one of the ways is, you know, think about a carved out Harry Potter book stuffed with M&Ms and candies,
fake,
right?
Harry Potter
fake
book.
One. Or how about this? A parent that hollowed out a soccer ball and packed it with candy. Yeah.
What?
They've been doing one mom, she even did a whole, she sent decoy packages to get the counselors off the scent of all her smuggling.
That's diabolical.
Diabolical. So I know you were intrigued by this story too. So I know there's a few items that shocked you about this. Go ahead.
The tampon box full of chocolate bars. That was an intriguing one. So my initial reaction to this was, come on, parents, man, let the kids go without candy for a while. They're at camp to grow. You got to separate from them.
Yeah, eat some
whatever.
Fruits and vegetables. Run around.
Then I read the story, and I was kind of impressed by the parents, to be honest. There was a mom from Cherry Hill who like re-cellophaned a Monopoly box using a hair dryer. And she was like, I kind of just did it because I wanted to see if I could pull it off. And I was like, that's kind of badass.
Yeah.
That's kind of badass,
but
Mom.
But you know what? I asked you this, like, you know, what's the craziest thing your mom ever did for you? Or what would you do for your kids? And to make them feel at home.
I would not do anything. In part because I couldn't pull it off. I know my limitations. Like, there's no way. I can't re-cellophane a Monopoly box.
You would be surprised.
I'm not crafty like that.
Maybe your wife could.
They would sniff my package out in a second. They would be like, this is candy. Anyways.
Yeah.
We want to hear from you about online reviews. That's the topic of the show today. Stay tuned to Studio 2.
These days, there's so much news. It can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Today's show is about online reviews. And we really want to hear from you about your experience with them, especially if you're a business owner.
But we could not, in good faith, ask for your reviews without reading some of ours. So, here's what people are saying about Studio 2.
The show is like sitting down for coffee at La Colombe and talking about the life of Philadelphians. Cannot wait to hear more from Cherry and Avi.
Avi Wolfman-Aaron sounds like a bad college radio announcer.
Best lunch hour show in Philadelphia. I love the topics, the thoughtfulness, and most of all, the hosts.
A bit biased, but I co-host the show and I like it.
Well, there you go. So, yeah, I mean, as you can hear, reviews are a mixed bag. And you
that's
know,
a real review, by the way. I love that review.
He posted that. Avi posted that. And so, yeah, as you can hear, I mean, reviews are a mixed bag. Yeah. And you never know the motivations of the folks leaving those 5-star and those 0-star assessments. But we keep using them, looking for someone who can help us sort through the onslaught of options.
On today's show, we talk about internet review culture, how it impacts businesses, and if it's actually a better way of making decisions. Let's introduce our guests. Katie Mayer is an assistant professor of marketing, business economics, and law at the University of Alberta. Katie, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Ernest Baskin is associate professor of food marketing at St. Joe's. Ernest, great to have you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And for our listeners at home and elsewhere, we encourage you to join the conversation. Our questions of the day are this: do you trust online reviews? And have you ever left or gotten a really bad or a really good review? You can call 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments coming in the live chat.
Callers, commenters, today is your day. So let's start with a call. Line two. Amanda from Fishtown. Amanda, you're starting us off this hour. What do you got on reviews?
Hi there. I have two comments. One is I was recently without cell phone service, and I had to choose a book to read at a bookstore. And I kind of picked one based on, you know, the covers. And then when I got back to cell phone service, I was really disappointed because the book had like a 3-star review on Goodreads. But I chose to read it anyway, and it's like the favorite book of the year so far for me.
Wow.
So I'm glad that I didn't have cell phone service at the time. And then the second thing was when I was picking daycares for my kids, I was looking more at the responses from the owners of the daycares on one place because the reviews were largely good, but the ones that were negative, the owners wrote were writing really negative responses back and kind of demeaning the reviewers. And I thought, that might be the way that they treat me as a parent if I become upset with something that happens with my kid while they're in their care. So I decided against that daycare.
Wow.
That's interesting. Because, right, like, if once you get deep into the reviews, mm-hmm. there's almost like meta-analysis you can do of the reviews and the responses to the reviews. Great call from Amanda. All right, so let's start with you, Katie. We were talking about this before the show, Cherry and I. We were like, It was almost like we've been incepted. Like we were like, at some point in time, we remember we didn't use reviews, but we don't know what we did back then. And we can't figure out why we use them obsessively now. So they must be serving some purpose, I guess, in order for them to be so popular. So how do you explain the popularity of online reviews or the ubiquity of them?
Yeah, I think there's a couple factors here. So first of all, they are really easy to have consumers provide these reviews, right? You can prompt consumers to write reviews and post them on Yelp, and that's really easy to do. I also think reviews do play an important role. So like, let's imagine that I'm looking to buy a toaster. If I just look at the information provided by the manufacturer or seller about the toaster, I know some stuff, but I don't really know what it's like to buy and own this toaster. In order to know that, I have to hear from somebody who's already bought the toaster and, you know, had a bunch of bread that they've toasted. And that's the role that online reviews really help to play, is by providing information about what it's like to actually own and use this product. So I think in theory, online reviews can be really useful for that reason. But I do think that there's a number of sort of issues that can arise with these, in part because measuring quality, which is what online reviews are supposed to do, is a bit more nuanced and subjective than measuring something like the temperature outside.
Yeah. And so, you know, who are the folks? Because I wonder, because I've left reviews, but I'm not a big reviewer. You know what I mean?
I'm an occasional reviewer.
Yeah. I just don't know. And I just wonder, like, who are the people that are really reviewing? Because I don't think like half of the people don't really do reviews like that. So who are we really hearing from, Katie, when we see these reviews?
Yeah, so you're right that a lot of people look at reviews, but not as many write reviews. And that can help explain why a lot of review distributions have a lot of five stars and a lot of one stars, but not a whole lot in the middle. So people who have extreme experiences seem to provide more reviews. And that can be bad for consumers because it means that the reviews that exist represent very sort of polarizing experiences and might not represent the full distribution of potential quality of the product. In other words, you're sort of missing out on those mediocre experiences and hearing about those types of experiences from folks.
One way to try to solicit that is basically to ask everyone to leave a review. Mm-hmm. Not that they'll necessarily do it, but that also inspires backlash too. Like from Walter, who emailed us. Walter says, every time I do business with any company, I get an email from them asking, would you recommend us to friends or family? Why do these companies think I am their advertising agency? I am not their public relations firm. I would consider it rude to tell someone I know where they should shop or go to a doctor or bank. So, Ernest, this does introduce a complication. Businesses soliciting reviews. What do we know about that practice and how does it affect, you know, the feedback that we get about these businesses?
So it is very, very common. And for a lot of businesses, they actually selectively solicit reviews. So they will first ask you maybe a question about how much you liked your service at a restaurant. And then if you said, I really hated the service, they will not solicit your review. Whereas if you said, I love the service, they might then say, hey, can you rate us on Yelp? Can you rate us on Google? Oh, and maybe we'll throw in $5 off your next meal at the restaurant. Mm. And so that might actually be contributing to a proliferation of much higher reviews for that restaurant because they are actively selecting the reviews that are more favorable to them.
They're putting their thumb on the scale. By the way, David on YouTube says, I am turned off by the businesses that shake you down for a review. My Jeep dealership does this at every service visit. Reviews need to be authentic and organic and not forced. And my follow-up question to you, Ernest, is like, how far are companies willing to go to get reviews? And if they don't like your review, are they willing to come after you for that too?
So there are some companies that do go after individual participants, individual reviewers, but thankfully that is few and far between because I think that most companies have learned that if you post responses on Yelp and they're really negative and they come off as unhinged, that's usually a net negative for your business. But that being said, they've learned over the course of many years that reviews matter. People look at reviews. and they need to get a lot of reviews. Some of them, they do it organically by emailing the customer, but there are also consulting services that companies like Yelp sell to businesses to help them approach customers and generate more reviews as well.
Wait, so Yelp is not just the forum for the review, it's helping businesses, it sounds like, try to get better reviews, or at least more reviews. That, I don't know if that's a conflict of interest, but it's interesting to me, Ernest, that Yelp is involved in both ends of that. It makes me a little distrustful, I guess. I don't know.
I mean that's fair. They, from Yelp's end, I will say that they try to keep those pieces of the business separate. But what Yelp does know is what, over scanning millions and millions of reviews that they have, they know what things contribute to higher numerical ratings. And so they can tell a restaurant, hey, if you improve X, Y, and Z, that will help. And specifically at your restaurant, A, B, and C are what is contributing to lower ratings potentially.
Interesting. By the way, we invite you, our listeners at home and elsewhere, to call in and participate in the conversation. Our questions are this: do you trust online reviews, and have you ever left or gotten a really bad or really good review? And if you're a business, we really encourage you to call in. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments coming in the live chat. And I want to bring in a caller. We have Luann from Glenside on the line. Luann, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, hi, Cherry. Hi. I have left reviews in the past, but then the more I learned about digital privacy and the surveillance that we're all under, I realized that everything you do is leaving a digital breadcrumb, and it's all being sold to data brokers. And it's frankly something I don't want to participate in any longer, so I don't do it.
Mm. So Luann tapped out. Thank you. That's Luann from Glenside. Katie, bringing you back in the conversation. I mean, we all know when everything you post online, it attaches data. I mean, how concerned should you be about this? And is Luann right to sort of like remove herself from the review game?
Yeah, I mean, I think that depends on your personal preferences and desires when it comes to privacy. Different websites have different policies for data sharing. And of course, when you're creating a username on a site like Yelp, you could always provide your full name, or you could provide a pseudonym, or, you know, maybe I would say K instead of Katie to be a little bit more anonymous. So I think those steps can be taken. And I think this really just comes down to the individual and how privacy concerned they are.
Mm. Yeah.
I have another caller actually with some privacy concerns, and I want to bring in Sheila from Doylestown online too, who has like a specific example of why it sometimes is uncomfortable to leave reviews. So Sheila, you are on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hi. So I've gone to a couple different like med spas to get different cosmetic things done, like whether it's Botox or filler. And they'll say, oh, leave us a review on Facebook. And I think, no, I'm not posting on my Facebook profile that I just went to you for Botox. Like, why would I do that? That's something I don't necessarily want to share with people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? And so that's going to also tilt the response pool based on the type of business it is. Jacob from Voorhees Township, New Jersey says, I usually make sure that I get the name of the customer service agent and then highlight their work in particular. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I even try to talk to their boss to highlight their outstanding work. So we kind of wish every reviewer was like Jacob, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of going out of their way. But at the same time, there's got to be a convenience factor, Katie, in like who leaves reviews and who doesn't. Like, you got to have the time to leave the review and the interest in it. How does that change, I guess, who's leaving reviews, and how does that change the types of reviews that come in?
Yeah, I think it's time. I think it's also a motivation to leave a review, which is usually meaning an extreme experience. So, like, I had such a bad experience that I feel like I have to say something about it and warn other people. Or on the flip side, I had such a great experience that I really feel like I have to reward the business by providing a good review, because I know that that will benefit them by providing additional customers and sales. So I think that helps to contribute to this pattern where we don't have a lot of reviews that are in the middle or represent these more mediocre experiences, and can mean that the reviews are a bit less useful in the sense that they're not representing all possible experiences that consumers have, and instead are just kind of representing a extreme minority.
Then the question, though, is like, what's the alternative? Because mm-hmm. For me, the problem that these reviews solve is the fact that there are just so many choices now. And for like any product you can buy, if you're in a neighborhood, you can see all 50 restaurants within a mile. Like, there's just so much choice now that the internet has unlocked. And without a way to sort through it, it just seems overwhelming. So, Ernest, is there actually like any legitimate alternative to this? Or is crowdsourcing really the only way to do quality assessment quickly in a world where there is so much choice?
I think part of the issue is that you essentially need to invest more time if you want to do more significant quality assessment.
Yeah.
Because part of the other issue with reviews is that you are relying on the reviewer's assessment of, I think, for example, the food taste is more important than service, or maybe service is more important than the food taste. And so what the reviewer is then translating to a star rating may not be the same as you would weigh the restaurant when you go to it. And so part of it is, in order to make these choices be more applicable to you, part of it is you need to be reading those reviews. And any summation will necessarily be subjective based on whoever is doing the summation.
Yeah, I want to read this comment that kind of goes to what you just said, Ernest. It's from Buggy, who's on YouTube, who says, a local coffee spot called out a reviewer who tanked their 5-star rating because, quote, coffee took too long. Two people worked there. The user eventually deleted their review. LOL. I mean,
LOL.
Because it's sort of like, if you think about it, I mean, people can differ and have major disagreements about the quality of service or the food or whatever. And so should you sort of take, you know, reviews with a grain of salt, Ernest? Because you may totally disagree with somebody and you may be more understanding. There's only a couple people who work there. I might have to wait a little longer.
So what I typically do when I look at reviews is I go into the actual reviews rather than take the above board star rating, and I look for what are the key commonalities. So if everybody is commenting about the speed of service, then likely speed of service is a problem. Whether or not I care about that is a different story. If everybody is saying the food is good, likely the food is good. And again, do I care about that or not? And then I wait for myself, all of these attributes and see, do I want to go here or not?
Yeah.
Let's bring in another caller now. This is Anne from Philadelphia on the line, who's got, I think, a story to tell. Mm-hmm. Anne, you're on Studio 2. You've got, I think, a kind of not so positive review experience to share. Hit us with the story.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. My spouse put in a negative review and now is in a lawsuit because of that negative review.
What? Wow. Wait.
Is it like defamation? Yep. What's the nature, if you could disclose?
The review was of a professional service that we were not satisfied with and just put it out there to say we believe the behavior was unethical and had examples. And from that is now been almost 2 years worth of a lawsuit.
Oh,
that
my gosh.
We have been representing ourselves so far, but this is going to get expensive at some point. So I caution people with your reviews.
Oh my gosh. Whoa. So I did not see that coming. So I guess I'm curious, Katie or Ernest, if you could answer this, like your legal liability when you leave a review. I didn't realize you could open yourselves up
to lawsuits.
I mean, is that maybe other things? I don't know. What do you, Katie, Ernest, any experience with that?
So I personally don't have any experience, but my guess is that based on whether or not you're giving an opinion, that matters. And then it also matters whether you are maliciously attempting to harm the business based on something that is factually untrue. So that would be my guess as what the legal basis would be. But again, not a lawyer, so totally not qualified to talk on this. But that would be my guess to where you're opening yourself up to some liability.
And my whole thought about this, I was like, that's why I asked if it's defamation, because truth is the ultimate defense. So if you're being truthful in your commentary, it makes you wonder like how you could be liable about that. But we won't pressure you on this if you haven't had experience, Katie.
No, I'm not a lawyer either, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I totally understand. Email from Maura from Ridley who says, I always try to leave reviews on Google when a place is amazing because I know it helps the owners. But I also don't have a lot of faith in customer reviews because so many people are paid to leave them or it's just an influencer trying to make money. And so I want to sort of like talk about the business impact. How does, you know, having, you know, top reviews help a business, and how, you know, often does one negative review or a series of negative reviews sort of tank a business? And Katie, if you could talk about that.
Yeah. So having positive reviews, an overall high average and a lot of 5-star or 4-star reviews can impact sales. So it can help increase the sales of the product. And it can even have impacts on stock prices. So online reviews can be really impactful, and having a negative review, meaning one that's 3 stars or lower, can really negatively impact a business. One working paper suggests that the impact could be a 50% reduction in the likelihood of buying the product. So that's pretty significant. Now, of course, it depends on how many reviews you have, because the impact of a negative review is probably going to be more substantial when you only have 10 reviews versus 10,000. But for businesses, these are really important because consumers do use them to figure out which product to buy. And so, you know, to some extent, like, their livelihood is on the line with these reviews. And so I think that's why businesses are really encouraged to solicit reviews from consumers to ensure that they have a good number of reviews and hopefully that those reviews are quite positive.
Wow.
Kevin in Cherry Hill says, online reviews have warped our minds. If a movie gets reviewed for 3 out of 5 stars, I'd watch it. If a restaurant gets 3 out of 5 stars, I'd never go, and I think it's awful. I don't know how a 5-star review became a standard review for a decent place. I'm curious, Katie, if there is like a multiplier effect that sets in if you get like a lot of positive reviews early, and maybe some sort of, whether it's Yelp or Google, the algorithm starts to favor you, and then more and more people come, and it kind of builds. And in the opposite direction as well, like those early negative reviews could just sort of send you down the search list in a way that you can never recover from. Because I have read about this phenomenon in the internet age where it's just like we all kind of go to the same places and the same places get recommended to us over and over again. So can you break that down for me, Katie? Is there kind of like a multiplier effect with these reviews?
Yeah, so especially on a place like Amazon, that will be the case. Yeah. Because on Amazon, the results that you see when you search for something are largely impacted by reviews. So a more highly rated product is going to show up higher on that results page. And there is some research to suggest that the first couple of reviews make a huge difference. If those are quite positive, people will buy the product and it will just continue such that you continue getting more sales, more reviews, and things are going quite well. If those first couple of reviews are quite negative, that can be really detrimental because then people don't see the product, they don't buy the product. And then, of course, that's not a great outcome for a business.
Yeah. It sounds like to me the smaller the business is, the more these reviews matter, because a lot of the companies I was telling Avi earlier, I've spent 40 minutes, you know, trying to find a backpack, and I ended up, you know, getting one with thousands of reviews, right? Versus the smaller company. And so I wonder, do you sort of need, the smaller businesses need more of these reviews, Ernest?
I think that the smaller businesses especially need reviews to get noticed. So if you're a brand that nobody has heard of, then you need a way to put your brand out there so that people know what it is and people know that it's a trustworthy brand and something that they're willing to buy. And just to go back to Katie's point on Amazon, one of the things that Amazon also prioritizes in search is whether or not the company has paid for placement. And so many of the products that you see on the first page that you search on Amazon are essentially ads of some sort that businesses have paid to Amazon. And so in some fashion, products that are starting off, I would encourage them to pay for at least the initial placement so that you get into the customer's consideration set, and then they are motivated to leave you reviews after the fact. That's one way to at least juice up your reviews so you don't have zero for a long time.
Right. Well, we're going to talk more about this on the other side of the break. Chuck wants to know about fake reviews. Mm. So maybe we'll see just how prevalent that is on the other side of the break. You're listening to Studio 2. We're talking about online reviews and online review culture today. Studio 2 at WHYY.org, 888-477-9499. We want to hear your review horror stories and good stories, too. This is Studio 2.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We have a bit of breaking news that came out in the past hour or so. Acting Governor Tahisha Way declared that New Jersey will enter a state of emergency effective at 2 p.m. today, which is July 31st, due to the potential for flash flooding, severe thunderstorms, intense rainfall, and damaging wind gusts. So 2 p.m. today, New Jersey will enter a state of emergency. And so on Studio 2, we've been talking about the proliferation of online reviews. Some people can't dine out or make a purchase without first consulting the reviews. So why did this happen? Does it help consumers or can it paralyze decision making in the endless quest for what for the very best? And how do businesses cope in an increasingly ratings driven world? With us on the show, our Ernest Baskin, Associate Professor of Food Marketing at St. Joseph's University. Also, Katie Mayer, Professor of Marketing at the University of Alberta.
If you are listening at home or anywhere, join the conversation. Do you trust online reviews? Have you ever left a really bad or a really good review? Same for if you're a business owner. Have you gotten a really good one or a really bad one? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, hello, drop a comment in the chat.
So I want to bring in a caller. We have DJ 007, who's actually been on Studio 2.
DJ!
In the past and is a business owner. DJ 00, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment? Have you gotten a good or a bad review? Tell us.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Avi. Hey, Sherry. Listen, I have gotten tons and tons of great reviews. As a small business owner, reviews make a very, very, very impactful difference to my business. It is really a way to, for those people that are looking at me to be a potential service provider, to see how my past customers have felt about my service. And that makes a big difference.
Did anyone ever do you dirty in the reviews, DJ? Or is it always glowing?
I have had one review that was just not at all what had occurred. Mm-hmm. And Google has a process that allows you to kind of dispute that and go through it. And then they found out that that person had left like 30 or 35 negative reviews that one day. They just, for whatever reason, left a lot of reviews that day. So they saw it as spam and took it away.
A serial hater. Wow, that's fascinating. Here's a comment from David who says, initial reviews are key. I'm a local painting contractor. Mm-hmm. I asked my well-known customers to rate me first. Needless to say, they gave me 5 stars in every category. Over the next 10 years, I continued receiving 5 stars. I work hard to leave customers happy, but perhaps they were influenced by the previous reviews. Hey, that conversation, that comment from DJ 007, Katie, opens up the question of fake reviews and spam bots and whoever else is out there on the internet doing God knows what. What do we know about the prevalence of fake reviews?
Yeah, so we know that they're out there and they're becoming potentially more of a thing as AI grows, in part because it just becomes easier to write fake reviews. One study puts fake reviews at about 16% of reviews. Notably, platforms do have a way to try and filter out these fake reviews. Yelp will do this and put them on a separate page that you have to click to go see those. But fake reviews can be really harmful. Usually they are quite extreme. So they're 1 star or 5 star because they're either trying to really help support the business or really harm it. And often they are for smaller businesses because those businesses are more affected by reviews. In other words, people don't usually look at reviews when they're considering a McDonald's versus right. a small restaurant.
Yeah. And, we're talking about this issue of, because DJ 007 is just a person who provides DJ services. And you think about photographers, people who are solo practitioners and things like that. And the reviews are actually of people, right? They're not necessarily, they're actual services. And I just wonder whether or not, you know, that has a different type of impact psychologically on folks when you're receiving that type of review.
Yeah, I'm not sure about any research on that, but I could completely imagine it, right? Like receiving reviews that feel like they're not accurate about your service that you're providing can be probably really impactful. And especially if you feel like you're trying to go out of your way to provide a really good service for customers. And I'm glad that there are ways for providers to contest these reviews, like through that Google mechanism that was mentioned. But yeah, they can be really harmful and just not a good practice.
Yeah.
We've got another caller on the line. Mm-hmm. This is Denise on line two. Denise, what's your question or comment on reviews?
Well, when I called in, they said that you might be interested. This goes back to reviews that were published in newspapers back in the day.
Yeah.
I worked in theater in Philadelphia for several years back in my youth. And I was in original production, and it got a lot of advance press, and everybody was all excited. And then this review came out, which actually slammed it up one side and down the other.
Oh, no.
And the reviewer finished the review by saying, he said, there are several other actors in this production, he said, whose names I will refrain from using, as I presume they intend to carry on successful careers.
Oh my gosh.
Well, but devastating was that, though? I just wonder how that felt.
Yeah, how did that feel, Denise? I mean, you still remember
it. It was actually funny.
Oh, good.
I'm glad you could laugh it off.
It was funny because we kind of knew what we were in when during the production, during the rehearsal.
Yeah.
So came out, we were just like, oh my God. And thank God I wasn't mentioned.
Outing yourself now, though, Denise. So thank you so much for that call. But that gets to a really important point.
Yeah.
Because the system before the system we have now was basically the sage on the stage, some person on high saying this thing is good or this thing is bad. That might be an entity like Consumer Reports. It could be a single critic.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of power consolidated in one person or one entity. And the question, of course, Ernest, is which system is better? The crowdsource system or the system where the expert kind of gets to make the sole judgment, but that expert, you know, genuinely does have a lot of expertise in the area?
So there's been a lot of research on wisdom of crowds, which suggests that when you get a lot of people, even though they may not have perfect knowledge, if you average what they all think all together, then you actually get a reasonably good estimate about what the true value of something is. And so in some cases, getting a whole distribution of opinions is actually a better way of doing things rather than getting one person's viewpoint who, yes, they may have access to a variety of maybe restaurants or theater productions, but they have a singular point of view. And again, you may not share their singular point of view.
Yeah. What's interesting, though, also about the consolidation is they're not anonymous. You know exactly who it is, right? Writing the review, whereas you don't know, these are strangers. And you know what, you know, a lot of times when you read these reviews, you don't know who these people are. And yet we put a lot of trust in complete strangers. Any thoughts on that, Ernest?
I think that the experts, to some degree, they, and many of them have been found out throughout the years, but they do try to hide their identity because especially at restaurants, when they know that there's a critic there, they pull out all the stops and give them the best possible service. And that by itself lends, it harms the credibility of the review, because if you're the average person going to a restaurant, you're not getting the experience of the identified critic that the restaurant knows is there that is trying to review the restaurant.
And I'm at the other side, opinion, the review, when you read the review, you know exactly who wrote it about you versus when you read the reviews, you have no idea who these people are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was the difference. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the democratization has really helped elevate the experience of everyone, because now a restaurant doesn't really know who's going to leave the review. And so the service level has to be high across the board. You can't just try to identify the critics and focus on them.
Yeah.
This is an interesting email from Jennifer, who says, I'm a healthcare provider who recently joined a new practice after 15 years in the field. My former employer erased me from their online platforms, and with that, all of my patient reviews. I'm now starting from scratch on a new review-based platform, and despite 2 5-star ratings, one anonymous 1-star review claimed I had poor bedside manner, and that's now dominating my profile. First of all, boy, do I sympathize with Jennifer. I mean, been at this for 15 years. And Katie, this brings up the important point of, we have talked a lot about sole proprietors who I guess are sort of conceivably in some control of where they were reviewed and how they were reviewed. But a lot of people are not the boss. They're sort of somewhere a tier below. And it does feel like we're in a world where they can get jerked around a little bit. I mean, is that a problem? Is that common? What are your thoughts on that, Katie Mayer?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a problem, right? Because those reviews that existed before this person moved to a different practice are still useful and can still tell us a lot about what it's like to go to this doctor. And so presumably patients should still have access to those. Sounds like, unfortunately, they don't. And that probably makes the reviews that do exist, these 3 reviews, less useful, right? Because there are fewer and they don't span a greater amount of time. So I think being able to have more reviews and have a history is really important, but there are possibly logistical concerns, like it's hard to move those reviews over to the new website when you move practices. So I think ideally there would be an easy way to transport those reviews, but sometimes that doesn't happen, and that's really unfortunate.
Yeah. I want to bring in another caller. We have Doug Molly from Philly's Gayborhood on the line. Doug Molly, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, I have a comment. But let me say, Sherry and Avi, I love your show. You get 5 stars from
Yay! I was waiting for someone to do that.
So I got 2 requests, actually, to post online reviews this week. One from a local frame shop in my neighborhood, another from a retailer. The frame shop, I'm going to do it with joy. The retailer asked me to review a shirt I bought. They said if I give 3 stars and above, I would get a discount, and that turned me off. So it just seemed manipulative, so I'm not going to post that review.
Wow.
First
Doug
of all,
Molly,
good on you turning down the deal. And thank you for the review, by the way.
Yeah, and that sort of leads me to my question. Like, so are there certain things that are you should review? And I mean, we started this show talking about Tea, an app that allows you to review the people you've dated. And I'm just wondering, there's a range of things you could be reviewing, right? Services, goods, whatever. Are there times, you know, can you give us some advice as we, you know, only have a few minutes left that of things you should review and how to go about that? And Katie and then Ernest, as we get ready to wrap up.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you feel like you have something to share, especially for a product that can be really useful for other consumers to know about, I think it gets a little bit more tricky when it's reviewing people, because again, quality is something that's very objective. And so saying like, oh, this painter or plumber was really bad, that might be a really subjective opinion that might be really hard to share because it's so subjective and it might not actually be that useful for other consumers. So I think just trying to think about how objective or subjective is this opinion and how much will it help other people who are looking at the reviews and kind of making a decision based on those factors.
Yeah. And Ernest, any advice as people sort of mill around, what should I be reviewing and how should I go about it?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Katie. I think that reviews are helpful, but the helpfulness is in the context. So the more information that you can give to people, the more helpful the review will be. So I would encourage you to not just leave a star review, but also leave a detailed account of what actually happened so that people can weight the review according to their own preferences.
Well, I'm going to say goodbye to our guests before I sneak in one more call. So Ernest Baskin, Associate Professor of Food Marketing at St. Joseph's University, and Katie Mayer, Assistant Professor of Marketing at the University of Alberta. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you so much.
And we have just about 45 seconds left. Anya from South Philly, you are going to get to close the show today before we get to DJ of the Day. Tell us your review story, Anya from South Philly.
Hey there. So I got scammed. I was looking for refurbished iPods. I did my due diligence. I found a seller that had thousands of positive reviews. So I bought the product, got it. They were obviously counterfeit. And then when I went to write my bad review, they had taken the product down.
Oh, no.
So I couldn't write the review. So that was the loophole that they were using to keep their reviews really well. So complete scam business. And I'm so angry.
That is so shady.
Thank you, Anya, for sharing that. And hopefully that, you know, being able to share kind of helps you a little bit. But that's so scammy and that's wrong.
Well, Anya got her review onto our show. Yeah, so be on the lookout for those scammers.
Exactly.
That was a good call.
So we have our DJ of the day, John from Westchester, who says it's got to be Earth, Wind and Fire, Shining Star. 10 out of 10. That's what John gives this DJ of the day. So 5 stars for you. Let's take a listen.
All right, let's talk about some of our shining stars here at Studio 2 as we close the week. Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Diana Martinez and Adam Staniszewski engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And what a fitting song for the stars.
Shine on, folks.
Shine on.
What your life can truly be. Shining star for you to see. What your life can truly be. Shining star for you to see. What your life can truly be.